Let's tidy up this tangle of film by putting it on a reel. Here is a motion picture film, 1,000 feet, 16,000 separate photographs.
Welcome, everybody.
How did you get involved with Diener 89? Let's start there.
That's a really good question. Let's start with the origin first.
Yeah.
Well, it's more so how the hell did I get involved with Paul? I think it's a
yeah.
question.
How does anybody get involved with that, man?
So, it was like, man, what was it? Probably around 2015, I would say.
Wow.
Holy that, no, that long. Wow.
That basically... I had made a bunch of short films. I was working in video games at the time, and I just like self-funded my crappy short films, and I was just like, okay, I'm just doing this for fun, you know. And so I was writing scripts and you know, coming up with a lot of ideas and stuff like that. And so anyway, I sent out one of my movies. I just sent them out to like a bunch of Canadian comedy actors, ones that I like really loved. And
who was in that list?
Oh my god, it was like a couple of the Trailer Park Boys. Yeah. It was definitely Paul Spence was in there.
Oh yeah,
Kids in the Hall, you know. Oh, yeah. And
I see you, buddy. I see you.
Yeah, but Paul was the only one that got back to me, and he was like, dude, this is fucking awesome, and he loved the film. And you know, so I was like, oh my God, I got his email, you know? So I'm like, this is sweet. Like, Diener actually responded. And he was very kind in his email. And so anyway, I was on a work trip out in Montreal, and I knew that Paul lived there. So I was like, hey man, do you want to go grab some beers? You know? And he's like, yeah, sure. So we went out to the bar, and, we just like immediately hit it off, and I think we definitely had a bunch of drinks that night.
Sure you did.
Kicked out of a couple bars too. Fuck yeah. But you know, it was really cool. We just became good friends, you know. And kind of ever since that night, we just kind of kept in contact, and he'd send me scripts, I'd send him, you know, ideas and things like that. And you know, nothing ever kind of came of it, but we were just like, oh, we're just, you know, two creative dudes, whatever. And then I had a couple more work trips, I think, in Montreal, and went out. And I think I was there one night when he was recording the Night Seeker album. And again, had a bunch of beers, and it was just like, it was so cool to see him finish the album, you know, with the band and everything. And I was like, whoa, this is cool. And then, you know, one day we just got chatting about Diener, because he was just kind of like, he'd done a bunch of stuff, and he was kind of like, I think he was a little tired of you know, what he could do with the character. And so anyway, we got chatting one day, and something sparked where, just like you guys, it was like, you know, what if we did something, you know, the origin of Diener, right? And then basically it was like, well, you know, what would that look like? I'm like, well, you know, what if it was set in the 80s, because you know, Diener is such a 80s fucking banger,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And it was like, oh my god, Diener in the 80s, that could be, you know, incredible. And so anyway, we just started kicking the tires on that idea, and you know, possible scenarios. And then we had kind of a concept treatment together, talked to a few producers. There was one really big producer that was going to take it to Netflix and do the whole thing.
Wow.
But then COVID hit like 2 weeks later. Ooh. And so it just sat, and it was like, oh my God. And it was like, no one's making movies now. Everything's done, you know, just everybody go hide. And so anyway, it just sat. And then one day I got a call from Paul, and he's like, dude, he's like, Mongrel loves the idea, and they want to make it, you know, they're looking to invest in it. And so he's like, we got a distributor on board, and we didn't even have a script at that point, you know.
Wow.
And then it was like, oh my god. And so next thing you know, we got Kyle Irving, you know, you guys know Kyle, I'm
Eagle
sure
Vision,
you do.
Kyle Irving,
yeah, Eagle, yeah, Rebecca, yeah. Gibson, so yeah, you know, the king of Manitoba, right?
Yeah.
He knows how to make it happen. So yeah, it's just like all these pieces started coming together.
Wow.
And then we went to Telefilm, and it was, Kyle was so smart too. He was just like, let's fly to Toronto and meet them in person, because it was basically everyone was still doing Zoom meetings and the whole deal, right? So we were the first people in person to like pitch to Telefilm in like, I don't know, 2 years, you know, which was
Were you 6 feet
crazy, right?
apart when you did
No, it was kind of
it?
like everything was kind of blow over, but it was
Right.
like, it was super cool. And you know, so we got to actually like, you know, sit down with them and chat with them for a couple hours and hash out the idea.
Really collaborate.
It was just like, oh my God, that human connection was just so important. And I think that that just was the push over the cliff, and that next thing you know, we're off to the races. And so, yeah, it's pretty cool. So
And this is
pretty
what,
crazy story
20?
though, right? Like just two
Yeah,
dudes on the
nuts.
internet, just like next thing you know. So it's really down to like, you got to put yourself out there sometimes, even if you're, you know, you're scared or whatever, and just be like, you never know what one thing will trigger another thing, will trigger another thing, you know. And here I am talking to you guys.
Yeah, no. So
Unreal.
when we heard it was coming, like we got the invite from Eagle Vision. Super solid of Kyle and everybody there. I've done some work with them at work. I try to do more with them. Like whenever they call, I'm like, you get a big price break. Yeah, like we're gonna take care of you, Kyle, because he's always
Nice.
doing something, right? But when
Yeah,
we
he
heard
makes
about
it
it,
happen.
I thought it was a dirty rumor, right?
Yeah.
I was like, don't take a, because like I think me and Charles can agree, we put Diener up there with SCTV. We put Diener up there
Totally.
Oh,
with
yeah.
Kids in the Hall. Like,
Like it's an absolute Canadian legend without a
oh, yeah.
doubt.
Oh, for
100%.
sure.
And, you know, it was at a point where it was like, I didn't think, like, after hearing the news with Fubar, I didn't think there would ever be anything coming of that. And then, yeah, hearing, and you guys did a really good job of keeping it low key. Like, I swear
Oh,
I never
God.
heard about it until it was like, it's coming out in a month. And it was like, what?
Was your working title Giver?
No, it was kind of originally, there was like a bunch of working titles, and I think it was 1989 was like the working one for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what? That's what your account was set up under as at United Rentals
There you go. Oh,
when
that's
you
so
called us
funny.
for some shit. I think you called for scaffolding for that. So I'm like,
That's so
now I know that that's the one, right? But I'm thinking, I'm sitting, it's just like, is it some weird Taylor Swift shit? Like
Yeah.
1989, right? Like, what's going on? And nobody really said anything about it. Boom, Diener 89 comes out. We go to see it, and I was like, this is kids in a candy store type
Well,
shit.
and it's such a brilliant way to reinvent a legacy, like a legendary character, you know? And I totally agree with you. Like when you hear Diener in 80s, you're like, it's just like, how, why haven't we seen that yet?
It's
You know what I
PB&J.
mean?
It's Sundays and weed. Like it's fucking Pilsner and heavy metal. Like,
I guess when you guys are like, when you were doing the pitch, let's say in person, were there specific things that you knew you had to include, and certain things that you had to make clear, like, you know, not focusing too much on Fubar, but obviously I'm sure that was an elephant in the room that, you know, kind of had to be addressed and whatnot. So when you guys were looking at the pitch, I'm assuming like this was also a big risk, saying like it's going to be just Diener, you know what I mean, like kind of thing like that.
Yeah, I think that like, you know, the story was about Diener. Like that's the thing. Like it was
It's
about
always
like,
been about him.
and it's like, where's he from? You know, like where did he grow up? And that's kind of why, like, as soon as we kind of came up with the concept of an origin story, it was just like, okay, like this is the beginning. This is before anything that we've already seen. This is what happened. And so I think it just kind of spoke for itself. You know, it was just kind of like, okay, well, they knew the story, so it was just about him growing up, you know, and it was older Diener telling the story, which is so cool, right? Like, and like we'll get into it later, but you know, the whole thing is basically like from his perspective of just like, you know, Diener's telling the story. You don't know if he's 15 beers deep telling you this story. And that's why it gets so ridiculous too. And like, you know, it's still grounded, it's still very grounded, but
For
it gets
sure.
so ridiculous because of the fact that like it's from his perspective. The whole movie's from his perspective. So yeah.
And something really fun you guys did is like he's telling the story, like we don't know, but he's telling the story from like he's made it. He's in this mega mansion, everything. And we don't know, like we don't really know, but like, you know, someone's kind of like, whoa, what's going on? And then leading up to it and the final revelation was just, it was fucking perfect. It was perfect. It was perfect. Like it's, and that's a really smart way to do storytelling too, because even in what Diener's known of, he is the storyteller. Whenever he's talking to the camera, right? Like he's painting his world of this is how he sees it.
He was also the narrator in the other ones, right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
It's always no matter what's happening.
It's been his story, and we're seeing the people that are in his life and revolving around Diener. But Diener is the son in that whole story, essentially.
Like, the son, the Father, and the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, like literally, literally, right? Like
what? Exactly.
So, like you said, you step out, right? Not only are you stepping out to Paul Spence, who one of my favorite performances by him is It's All Gone Pete Tong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As the backup singer.
Yeah. The
la, la, la. Like it's, and I'm like, is that? Oh, it is.
Yeah.
But, so it, did you not only Paul Spence, but was there pressure like approaching Diener? Right? Like that's, something in the background that's there?
I don't think so. I think because we were, you know, we were friends for like a long time and we literally talked about this movie forever. Mm-hmm. That his landing gear is down again.
Yeah, we're doing a little mic switch up. I
did you rent that from United?
No, I didn't.
Well, out. These are reserve mics.
Yeah. Keep going with your answer. I'll get a mic.
What was I talking about?
Mike, you were asking about like
pressure,
I guess,
about being in, taking on a character like Diener.
Yeah, taking on a character like Diener, if there was any pressures or anything kind of like
No, because it was just so much fun. So it was literally like we had talked about this idea for 2 years leading up to the film, right? So like by the time that we got to set, it was like this is so much fun. So there was never like, oh my God, we're doing it wrong. And the fact that like of all people, Paul knows that character so well, right? Like, and he wrote it. So, so just like the trust was so much there. Like, you know, we were like brothers, you know, in the sense of like, okay, like you got this, I got this. And, you know, we're covering everything from both sides. And so, there was never a question of, you know, fucking it up at all. Right. You know what I mean?
That's awesome.
There's a couple times though, like, you know, because, you know, Paul's such a physical actor too. Like he does a lot of physical comedy. So you got to understand that like pretty much every scene he's in it. So if you think about the days that he had to do, it's like he's literally almost in every fucking scene.
Right.
And did it work now?
I think so.
Oh yeah. Here we go.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. All right, cool. Okay.
Nice. But yeah, he was in every scene. So like, it was so exhausting for him. Right. And he lost 50 pounds for that movie, right? Wow. So he was like,
holy shit.
I don't know, he was like over 200 pounds, I think, when we first met. And he got down to like, I think like 150. Wow. And so like physically, and the thing is like, he had like a very lean diet. And so he was always just like exercising and everything like that. And then like, he'd have to do tons of stunts and like all the hockey scenes, like that's him playing hockey,
that's,
you know, like
awesome.
he's a really good hockey player. Yeah. So like, there's a lot of times too, where it'd just be like, he could get tired and I'd be like, okay, is, you know, we had this thing where I'm like, fire up the Diener. And he knew straight away. He's like, oh yeah, I'm getting tired. I need to fire up the Diener, you know? So sometimes I'd have to crank some AC/DC or something like that just to get him going. But he killed it. He absolutely killed it.
Well, yeah, like I would and it's funny, you make a very good point. Like in terms of shoot days, like those are long days for him for sure. And especially if he's being physical in almost every scene and everything. And you would never know watching the movie that this guy can get tired. Like he is so.
I didn't know he had that speed.
Yeah, like
that's not something I'm used to. Like,
he is.
You don't see.
Yeah,
I've seen him
insane.
In concert. I've seen him in person. I've met the man. Like everything about him is an 11. Right.
Yeah. No. The amount of commitment. Like that's why I'm saying is like, I understand when people talk about like Daniel Day-Lewis. Oh my God, the way he embodies characters. Whatever. I get it. But like Jim Leahy and Diener are two characters/actors that I'm like, you guys don't know what embodying a character, right? Like that, those are performances that are absolute, like Diener's just unbelievable. Like it's one of those things where when you realize it's an actor, you don't want to believe it. You're like, no, it's Diener. Like, it's just Diener. Like, he's got to be a guy. Oh, yeah. He's a real guy.
Oh, I didn't know his name for the longest time. I just thought Diener. I just defaulted to Diener. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, he's like late. He's in his late 40s. And, you know, the way that he can move is just like, you know, you look at some late 40-year-olds that are just like so stiff. Fucking old. And he could jump up on tables and just like he'd throw himself so many times where, you know, I remember a bunch of times Kyle would get worried being like, he's going to get injured. And I'm like, no, he's not. He knows exactly what he's doing. And I had full trust in him. So there was never any doubt of like, you know, or that pressure to be like, we have to see, you know, we're getting the character wrong or pressure with Paul. It was just like, it was such a collaborative process that it was so much fun.
That's awesome.
Speaking of like fun, this is a fun cast.
Yeah.
Were you and Diener and Kyle, like, was there a lot of back and forth? Because what you've settled on, for those who haven't seen the movie, you've got Will Sasso, Kevin McDonald, Mary Walsh, right there.
Yeah.
There. You have one guy who does some of the best wrestling impressions on the history of the planet,
which
I'm sure you got to experience.
Of course.
And then you've got a kid from Kids in the Hall. And
that's
then
a
you've
dream.
Got This Hour is 22 Minutes right there.
Yeah.
But then you get Maddie Foley and Star Slate, who are awesome.
Yeah.
And Lauren Cochran as the mom, local Manitoba.
Big, yeah. She's
what
a friend
was,
of the pod.
What was the collaboration process between all of that plus Diener?
Yeah, that's a good question. And, like, you know, I think that, you know, Paul and I especially had this thing where it was just like we had to trust our guts, you know, on the film. And so it was just like if somebody was getting a bad feeling about, you know, one cast member or something like that, you know, just be like, you know, I think we can do better. Or I think this isn't the right fit, you know. And you got to understand that, like, this is Diener's childhood, you know. So everything has to fit in his world. And it's a small, shitty town in Canada, you know, and it's not, I'm not shitting on Manitoba.
No.
You know,
yes. We know very well.
I grew up in a small, shitty town in Canada. And so, like, I knew what it was like. And, and so it's just like all these characters had to fit in this world. So we didn't want like a bunch of like pretty, you know, generic looking actors or anything like that. Like, we wanted a genuine characters. And, you know, I love movies that every single character like counts, you know, like it's like the Coen brother movies and stuff like that. Like, you can remember characters that had just like one line in it. Right.
Totally.
And so to me, that's like, I love that with casting is that, you know, it's just like every single person has to embody that character and it all has to fit in Diener's world, you know? So does that make sense?
Oh, totally.
That makes perfect sense. A lot of you make a great point, and I always wonder like where does reality break from fantasy? Is a lot of what's in the story real to Diener's childhood, or was it some like, was he inspired by a lot of stuff? Like, are we exposed to Diener was adopted? Are we are these facts of Diener's life?
Or Paul's like of life? Paul's life?
Or, yes. Yeah. Of Paul's life.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's why he got inspired to write the script was, you know, he is Indigenous. Right. And so like he discovered all this too, of just like, you know, growing up and living in this white world and all that stuff. So it was coming from a real place, which was super cool. And also like I had, it was similar to my childhood too. So like, there's a lot of things in the movie that reflects, you know, how I grew up. Like, I grew up in Peterborough, Ontario.
Oh yeah.
Sorry.
Sorry. Eh? And, it's a fucking hockey town. Right. Yeah. And so, and I grew up in the '80s in Peterborough. And so, you know, it was, a lot of that, like Glenn's car was literally like, that's my dad. That was my dad's car. You know, like the kitchen, the way it's set dress was like, that's how I grew up. Like, just like all these little quirks and stuff like that, I was able to add in from my childhood. And same with Paul's. And I think we both grew up like Catholic. And so like, there was all these things and we both listened to heavy metal too. So like, just like, it was kind of collaborating both our childhoods together. But, you know, ultimately the story was, you know, from Paul's like personal experience too. So, but he wasn't adopted. I met his dad. His dad's actually in the fair scene. He's holding a balloon.
Oh, that's awesome.
For you guys. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But I really feel There were so many moments, like whether it was with, you know, Will Sasso, the dad, Lauren, like even the interactions with the two of them just together. I'm like, I guarantee my parents said the exact same shit when me and my brother went to our rooms.
Oh, yeah.
They're like,
oh, totally.
You know what I mean? And we're at an age now where I'm like, oh my God, like I relate more to them. You know what I mean? Like
I did a rewatch on Monday when I was coming up with all this stuff. Cause I'm like, the conversation where he's talking to mom and he's talking to dad after when he finds out that he's Métis. And the mom being like, well, we just, you know, we thought we wanted to protect you, right?
Yeah,
like,
right.
I mean, every parent of the 80s says we were just trying to protect you.
Right.
Yeah.
This is protecting you from your own identity, which is the sin of all, I guess, as an adoptive parent can be. But it was just really the most genuine moments have some of the best humor.
Oh, yeah. And it's cool to just ground it in some of those real things, too, you know, because it was so easy for us to just do Diener fucking drinking and partying and that's it, right?
Yeah.
And it's especially even for the ending too. It's like, oh, Diener just keeps on partying, you know? It's just like, that was just so easy to do that, you know? And I think that like to add this like deep, rich layer in it just made it that much better, I think, you know?
Oh, it makes your heart.
Paul did a great job at that.
Totally. And I mean, like you said, like we have a lot of versions of these characters just given her. It was nice to see that, but see the origins of it. Like, even a subtle scene you guys did where the dad, Will Sasso, chugs the fucking priest's holy water.
Oh, that's great.
Right? Fucking amazing. But that little thing right there, I'm like, well, that's where Diener gets it. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly,
and you would never expect it because it's kind of hidden. Like, it's away from the kids. It's just them two. But the way he did that, I was like, holy fuck. Like, that's totally, like, dude, but it was cool seeing
that's
that.
Will Sasso just improv into like
really eh?
He's a master at improv too, so it was so cool.
Do you do when you've got someone like Paul who's instinctive and intuitive and knows a character cold like putting on a pair of pants, then you get three amazing improv artists? Like was this a lot of breaking? Was this a lot of like, oh shit, I can't hold it in
anymore? or letting them riff
like what was that dynamic?
Well, because like we took the approach of like a very cinematic approach, right? So like at a specific way of how I wanted to shoot it. So, you know, especially for continuity and trying to, you know, cut it together and things like that, like we had to be very careful about too much improv. So it was like, okay, like let's just try and stick to the script as much as possible because we know the script really works. Because a lot of times, like you'll get on set where something can be like really hilarious, and then when you actually cut it together, you're just like, oh man, this is not funny at all. It was just funny on set, you know.
Yeah,
and it was an inside joke that we're trying to cut into a scene.
Yeah.
So it's just like, you know, because like the other thing is that we shot this movie in 22 days and it was like 11 hour days. Like we really could not go over the 11 hours and I actually didn't. And
well done, sir.
Oh yeah.
It was. And so we had that, I had that level of pressure constantly. So the pressure was more on like just getting your shots. It wasn't really about like staying true to the fans and everything. Cause you know, I'm one of the biggest fans. So
it was
more to do with like, we got to get these shots. And so, you know, the way that I approached shooting was like, okay, I got to get this in like basically three setups, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I specifically was like, okay, like how am I going to cover this whole scene with just basically three shots? Right. And so, so that's where, again, like the improv side, it was hard to be like, okay, just don't go too crazy. And sometimes actors can't do that where they just like start to go off and you're like, oh my God, we're eating into time now. And, and you know, we're just wasting time. And you know, cause I've been editing my whole life. Right. So it's like, I have an editor's brain and I know if stuff's going to work or not work. And that's where I'm just like, you know, we stuck to the script as much as possible, but there was moments where it was like, yeah, that's going in the movie for sure. So
as we talked about this before, but there's multiple nominations for this movie at the Canadian Screen Awards.
Fuck yeah.
May 31st.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this right now, it's probably going to be in the next 24 hours. But you're up for the First Time Directors Award, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet, eh?
That's awesome.
Yeah, what's the name of that award? It's eluding me right now. I'm sorry. It's
the John Dunning Award.
The John Dunning Award.
Yeah.
So
that's huge.
Well, and so my question to you is, do you think that having the editor's brain where you know the mechanics of how to put a scene together after you've shot it, is that a feather in your cap that helped you with this? Like, if you didn't have the editor's brain, maybe you would have let them go longer because you understand time?
I think so. I think it definitely helps my directing side for sure, you know, because you got to understand as well that, like, you know, I've been watching this movie in my head 2 years prior to shooting it, right? So it's always like visualizing it. And so I was always, you know, cutting the scene even in my head before I do it. And so, I definitely think it helped. Like, and I fall back on previs a lot too. So, you know, like, there was one of the questions before we got financed was like, how are you going to pull these stunt sequences off? And I was like, well, that's the easy part. You know, I'm like, the drama is going to be the hard part for me. You know, I want to flip a car. I want to do tons of action and stunts and, you know, so I came prepared. Like, I definitely came prepared for a lot of this stuff. And it was always just, you know, visually showing people, this is the vision, this is what I want to do. And I know it works. And then everyone's like, oh, we get it. Yeah. And then, you know, give it to them and then they would just make it even better. So, yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, yeah, like I think that's, mm-hmm. I think it definitely has got to give you an extra edge because, like you said, you already can kind of map it out. You know, already from a standpoint, like, this is where the cut would go. So we got to make sure we, you know, stick with it. And I think the more, you know, a lot of things that people don't realize in terms of how movies are being made is, yeah, set time is a really big factor, you know?
Yeah.
And I imagine it changes from the country, state, province, whatever, but generally those things are like mandatory. Like, if they're saying the most you can film in one day is this much, like, they really, and you, like, you're right. Like, that's an added pressure that people don't think of. Like, people think when movies are being made, like, you take as long as it needs to take. In regards, yes, but in a lot of them, no. Like,
no, yeah, not for indie movies. And right. You know, like, there's nothing that pisses me off more than directors coming in, not being prepared, and then trying to, you know, basically just shooting coverage and then figuring it out in post after and relying on the editor to basically tell the story for their movie.
Get me out of this
fucking
hole.
I'm like, why would you do that? That's so lazy. Like, just take the time, figure out what you want for the scene, and then, you know, go from there. So that's the way I approach everything, you know.
That's awesome. That's
saying great. That you had it in your head for 2 years, is this what was in your head?
Yeah, it's pretty damn close, you know. It was pretty cool. And, like, you know, because we only had like 3 weeks for prep, like, you know, when prep happened, it was insane. It was like, okay, just go. And like, everyone's just showing me stuff and I've got to approve everything. But like, I was making documents for like every department. So I, you know, I had documents for like hair and makeup. I had documents for the cars, for costume, for the haircuts, like just everything. So I was like, here's all these references. And I give it to them. They'd be like, oh, this is the box that I need to work in. And so then they'd go from there and they'd know exactly what they're doing. They come back. Oh, you have exactly what I asked for. That's so sick. And so it was just being really prepared, because I knew when the storm hit, it was going to be on. I want to be prepared. So, and that's the thing, again, like with all my references, it wasn't like I just showed up on set with them. Like, I was, you know, collaborating with Paul the whole time, you know, be like, hey, this is what I'm thinking for lighting. You know, this is what I'm thinking for, you know, May's house and the Murdoch house and everything like that. And he's like, yeah. You know, and so we were like both approving everything before we even started. And again, because I had a lot of those references that then I could just basically then, you know, hand them off and to all the department leads and they get it done. So, you know, it's like, take for instance, our DP, right, Sammy. You know, the look that I wanted for it was kind of this like tobacco stain, you know, because it was just like, it was dirty and it was 80s, but I wanted to have it like a nice timeless look, right? Especially for the hockey stuff. Like, the hockey stuff has this kind of like tobacco-y yellow feel, right? Yeah. And like, I wanted to create like a color palette for this whole movie too, right? Like, and so I showed him the references, you know, and because I was looking for a DP and I really loved his work. And so he was doing some camera tests and we developed a LUT and it was just like, boom, that's it. And there was a lot of times where, you know, we just go in and you just, you know, light a set and be like, here, what do you think of this shot? I'm like, this is exactly the same as the reference I gave you. Like, that's fucking insane. Like, you just pull it out of your ass that, like, that fast, you know? And so it was really cool to see that vision come to life. Like, it was rad.
That's so cool. 'Cause, like, I mean, that's like the ideal creative process, that you can just be like, you say something, you're like, look at this. And then, they do, like, it happens. And, you know, and,
totally.
Right? Like, that's
totally.
It's so cool. Like, it is why we love movies. Like, that's a big part of it, is that people, the creative process is something that is so, I mean, it makes sense. If the movie is fucking amazing, you would like to hope that the creative process as well, too, right? You know what I mean? Like, they got to complement each other. So that's so cool. That is so cool.
And that's the thing, is like, look, I've been making movies since I was a kid, probably since I've been like 10 years old, like home movies and stuff like that. And so to finally get to like my first feature film at, you know, how old was I? I was at 43 at the time. I was just like, this is so fucking sweet. And so every part of the process, like, I enjoyed it so much. Like, there was never anything that I would fight, because I'm like, this is so fucking cool. So it was just, I enjoyed the ride, you know, and then the destination was even better. So, you know, it was fun.
Well, and it shows, like, that's why I think it's so great. Like, and I mean, again, like, it is a wild, like, it is wild to reinvent a character like that. And then blown away. Like, and I mean, it makes sense hearing your side of it. I mean, it really, what I love most is everybody cared. Everybody really cared, right? And I mean,
Well, it's really cool is, you know, when you say that everybody cared, like, the crew in Manitoba, like, really fucking cared. And it, you know, it definitely, it starts from the top, and, you know, and I think it trickles down. And so, you know, we were making a comedy, and, you know, I really wanted the vibe on set to be like, to be fun, but also like, we're under the gun, you know, we're shooting 11 hour days, 22 days. It's an ambitious script. There's a lot of stunts, you know, and, but, you know, everyone was so fucking rad. And I was wearing heavy metal t-shirts, you know, when I first started prep, and then slowly everyone started wearing their heavy metal shirts. And then, you know, by week one, everyone was starting to say fucking give her, and everybody's fucking swearing, and it was just like, the vibe was so fucking awesome on set. And again, that just, you know, made everybody do their best work, you know. And and so it was so cool. It was so cool to have that.
That's awesome.
We get to see the polished version. We get to see the soft touches and everything that's made into this. And you do. I love that it was shot cinematically. Like, it does have that sheen.
It's cool to see Manitoba, right? Like that. Like, it was really cool. All the spots that you're like, holy fuck, that's Tech Valk, I think. Or this
It was.
Fuck,
yeah.
It's Selkirk Arena.
It was wild. Yeah. And it was like, fuck, it looks, it's a movie.
It's a movie.
Yeah.
Taking place here.
Yeah.
But like, what was, I mean, you're a man of many hats, you're in every department, you're prepared, but what do we see on screen that was just damn near impossible? Was there a day, is there a scene that we'll never know that you might have been like, fuck, how are we going to do this?
Yeah, I'm pretty ambitious. So, you know, I'll go till I can't go, and I don't know, like, yeah, there was lots of struggles, but, you know, like, for instance, the bus chase, like, I don't know, it was probably close to 40 degrees. So in the script, the original script, it was 50 police cars chase the bus.
Blues Brothers.
Yeah. So that's what Paul wanted, right? Kyle's like, there's no fucking way we're getting 50, you know, police cars. So I'm like, okay, I work in visual effects too. And so I'm like, okay, well, you know, we'll do it in our wide shots. We'll create a bunch of, we'll comp it in. We'll do a bunch of, you know, cop cars there. And so anyway, I'm like, okay, I need 10. He's like, I'll give you 5. Like, okay, well, you know, the medium shots aren't going to look that impressive, because I'm like, we got 5 cars, you know? And then all of a sudden, then he's like, you know, the day of the shoot, he's like, I hate to tell you this, but he's like, we can only get 3, you know? And I'm like, okay. So I'm like, fuck, like, how am I going to pull this off? The script says, you know, 50, and now I got to, you know, now we're just going to spend more money on VFX. Right. And so then, anyway, then, one of the cop cars just dies. And this is what happens when you shoot a period piece, right? It's just like everyone thinks like, oh, it's rad to shoot a period piece. Like, especially for cars, it's the fucking worst. They always break down.
For sure.
And and so then anyway, I'm like, okay, so now what do we have? Two cop cars. And I'm like, I can't do this scene with two cop cars, you know? So then anyway, they're like, okay, well, we can get you this brown car that looks like an undercover cop car. And I'm like, fuck. I'm like, okay, so that's why, like, if you look at the chasing, there's a brown car in there.
Yeah, I remember
and then,
that's great.
Yeah, and then, like, there's a couple of shots you see, like, one of the mufflers is just, like, dragging on the ground with, like, one of the cop cars. And just, like, that was a little stressful because, like, the heat, the car's breaking down, and just, like, oh, my God, are we going to pull this off? And, like, we lost maybe, like, an hour and a half of fucking around with, like, cars, right?
Yeah,
you know, so I'm like, man, like, we're losing time now in shooting, right? So... it was just shit like that, that, you know, you just feel like, okay, little hiccups, but yeah, we got the shots.
I think my favorite moment in it is the superhero moment when he opens the trunk and then starts to pull out all the things, right?
Oh,
like
yeah,
the cigarette from 40 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the jacket and all that stuff. Is there a world out there where, like, you guys just played with everything that was coming out of that, or were you specifically set on that was the things that Diener needed to find in the trunk to have a
No, those were specific. Yeah, Paul wrote those in, and it was just like, Bob, we had so much fun. We're like, what's in this fucking trunk? And like, what would Murray Messier have? And then, like, you know, we started getting into the lore of the whole thing with Murray and everything like that. And we didn't want to dive too deep with Murray,
right?
You know, to keep him like more of a mystery. But yeah, it was fucking hilarious. It was just like, you know, something out of like Indiana Jones or something, you know.
It really
just, like,
really
uncovering
was.
Like
was.
The,
yeah.
The lost artifacts. You know?
It was like finding the Ark of Diener.
Yeah.
And
I also love how you guys really like the seeing the Métis patch, it's a big deal, but like it's also like you don't make. But I love how eventually, how again, it's typical Diener, how he finds out is like, it was beautiful. Like, it was really nice. And like, even the way they did it, I was like, that's awesome. And obviously, you know, you have a huge, there's a huge Métis population in Canada and Manitoba, never mind.
Yeah,
so obviously that was like, and I'm sure Paul loved that as well. Like you said, you know, embracing his indigenous roots, that was a great way to do it in this film.
Yeah.
Right? And that's a layer of Diener we never, like never
I know.
Explored.
And how cool is that?
So
like,
awesome.
Now, like in, yeah, it was so much fun.
I looked over at Charles in the movie when that was happening, and I was like, fuck, what is happening? This is so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, this is the last place, because, like, the previous scene is Diener saying something inappropriate or somebody drinking holy water, and then all of a sudden it has this heartfelt moment.
Yeah.
And I'm always curious, like, you go from fucking giving her in Hard Rock t-shirts to having to be serious in your comedy. Does that... Is that a hard switch? Is that just something because you love the material? You're like, yeah, it's just another day.
No, it was a hard switch because, well, the hard switch in the sense of like, we were shooting back to back drama, like the Murdoch house. While it was great, after like day three there, I was just like, I want to get back to shooting some stunts, you know? I was it would start to get just like heavy. And then we'd be like, what are we fucking shooting? Are we shooting a drama? You know, because like that's what it kind of felt like. Like at times where you like now your head's in the drama space and you're starting to not laugh as much or whatever. But it takes all those colors to make a, you know, great movie and a great comedy, I think, you know, like, oh my God, the scene where, you know, Myrna's having that conversation with him, you know, where he finds that she threw out his ticket.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
And you talk about stress was, we were shooting in some neighborhood in Manitoba or in Winnipeg. And, these fucking neighbors were literally, building their driveway and they were like, we're not moving. We have to pave our driveway. And like, these are all like quiet scenes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, like, how are we going to do this? These are all like dialogue scenes that we're doing in the Murdoch house. And they were like fucking sawing concrete and like, you know, drilling and everything. And I'm like, oh my God, how are we going to get these shots? Like, you know, can you just ADR it? And I'm like, no, like, I'm not fucking ADRing this. Like, you know, and so like Kyle, like literally went over and was like offering them like tons of money. And they're like, nope, sorry. Like, we're not doing it. Wow. And so anyway,
what dicks. Car-
no
yeah. Yeah. It was so shitty. And, but anyway, like Kyle was so rad. Like he was like, no, we're going to get these shots. And so he like went over to the workers then. And anytime we were shooting, he would just go over with like sandwiches and stuff like that. And they'd be like, hey, you guys want some sandwiches? And they'd be like, yeah. And then they'd stop working because they'd be eating. They'd be like, get the shot, you know? So
that's awesome.
Yeah. That's how a producer yeah. thinks.
Yeah.
Well, and you know
yeah.
what? Just what you described alone, I'm like, that could be an episode or that could be an easy like thing on a short on a thing of like behind the scenes that people would never
know.
Never think of and never and that's oh, yeah. like that's
you
literally
gotta the, get greasy.
Exactly.
Get greasy. Yeah.
And that's a
yeah.
definition of you gotta get the shot. You gotta do what you yeah. can to get the shot. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that's fucking and yeah,
yeah,
that must have been a little pressure, like go. They're eating right now. Go.
Yeah, yeah,
3 minutes. Fucking go yeah. Lord.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome though. That's awesome.
So funny. So yeah. funny. Yeah.
And you never know watching it, right? Never know. Would never
no, exactly.
have no idea no like that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you find? Meeting the guy who you really respected, how did you how had Diener's character changed, and was there any is there a moment where Paul and Diener kind of meet in the middle?
I think Diener grew up.
Did but, he?
You know, yeah, yeah, like, you know, I think that we're seeing the mature Diener, right?
Yeah,
we're seeing, and what was cool is because we're seeing the mature Diener and then we're seeing the immature Diener, right?
Yeah.
And so it was cool because, like, you know, to play the young Diener, like, we were like, okay, what do we do here? You know, like, do we cast a younger person, which we didn't want to do because there's only one Paul Spence.
Totally.
And then, you know, working in visual effects, I'm like, okay, like, do we do the deep fake, you know, young Diener? And I'm like, you know, and this was like 2 years ago, so the tech wasn't as good as now. And I'm just like, it's going to look weird. The audience is going to know. It's going to be distracting. And I'm like, fuck it. Like, let's just, you know, go with the Paul playing a 16-year-old, right? And
but he does but it was, so well. Like, I'm not buy in, right?
Yeah. Well, it's exactly what you said is no one else can play Diener.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I think it's another comedic genius move to do, because the thing is, throw in some fucking braces, you know, make him a little bit like,
cut
try to
hair.
Be like, you know,
yeah.
And even what's funnier is you have him cast with actual younger
16-year-old,
yeah, right,
like his sister and him,
fucking
I'm
brilliant,
like, I'm in it,
but it's brilliant. It never takes you out. If anything, I'm like, this is actually the only option, like, this is fucking hilarious, right? Like,
yeah. And so, like, that's the thing, is like, we were able then to explore like new versions of the Diener, because, like, you know, we hadn't seen a 16-year-old Diener, you know, what's he like? And then what is a late 40-year-old Diener like?
Right.
What's he like now? And so, and I think because we were able to contrast that with the old and the young, then it was cool. So, but overall, you know, he's a mature Diener now. He's still a shyster, but good guy, you know. He's not a shyster, he's more selfish, but then he cares too, you know. So yeah.
Yeah, we saw another, like, I think this movie showed, like, Fubar did they did a good job in always making those little heartfelt moments because it was like needed, but this was more organic, and this was just a layer of Diener that you're like, yeah, this makes sense, like, because he's not an evil person. He's just this, like,
misguided.
Yeah, and he's also got this, like, because of the way he dresses or whatnot, everyone's like, whoa, he's rough, but he's not. And this really showed, like, he's
heart
eccentric.
Of gold,
right. He cares.
Soft, gooey
he does
center.
Care.
All the scenes with his family in general was, like, beautiful. They were so good. Like, especially the relationship with him and his sister was awesome.
Well, it really was a pleasure to see him, like, bite into some... Not that he can't act, but bite into something that's foreign to him, right?
Yeah.
Not lying about cancer and having your testicle, like, you know, not the absurdity, right?
Yeah.
It's such a fresh take, and in a time where everybody's asking for originality, you've done the thing where you made a new story.
Mm-hmm.
You it's what we call the requel, right? Like, it's in this case, it's more of a prequel than
it's a like
sequel.
a multiverse Diener.
A multiverse Diener. Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
whatever you want to call it. But
you've
given us an original story on a known character, and I think that's where the beauty of, you know, going back to the well.
Yeah.
But at the same time, what direction are you going in?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and it did what every good movie does. From the minute it ended, I was like, I'd watch like Diener 90. Or, like, you know, wherever you guys go with this, I'm fucking in.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I'm totally in.
Well,
now,
especially, like, you know, because there's a couple times we're like, okay, do I shoot this handheld? Do I go like, you know, full documentary style? And then, you know, Paul actually pushed me because he was just like, he's like, no, dude, like you're better than that. Not that, you know, that was bad, but
no,
it's just
but,
like,
yeah,
you can definitely go further. And I think Paul really wanted something new and fresh. And I was like, okay, well, you know, you want to go full cinematic, let's fucking do it. And so, you know, but also like we wanted something that, you know, would be timeless. And so like, and even though like, you know, I've worked in visual effects for a long time that, you know, I didn't really want to use any visual effects. Like, and that's why like the car, flipping the car, like there's a real dude in that, you know,
awesome.
Like
that's
all
Rick
the stunts
Skeen, right?
are real. And, you know, there was no visual effects. And because I wanted this film to like hold up in another 20 years or 30 years, that's like, oh, it doesn't look dated. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I'm not following trends of just making good cinematic choices and that's it, you know? So.
Oh, you're definitely going to fall into like the Canadian classics, I think. I think in 20 years.
Oh,
I hope so.
Hell yeah.
I will defend this movie as one of those that goes down in, you know, like the Canadian Bacons, right?
Yeah, totally.
Or like that classic 80s, 90s, like that lovely John Hughes feel of a timeless classic that nobody focuses on anymore.
Well, it fucking sucks now that nobody's making these movies anymore. Like, and if you look at like even movies growing up, it's just like even like Dumb and Dumber or like, you know, Something About Mary or like, I don't know, Super Troopers. Like,
yeah, Ronch
calls. There's no good comedies anymore. Yeah. Planes, Trains, Automobiles. Like, like there's like, why the fuck are they not making these comedies anymore? And I think maybe comedy died for a little bit, you know, but also like the indie movies are not really making comedies anymore. I don't know. Like,
well, I have the opinion of the mind that unless it's tentpole, shareholders want to make money, right? So you've got the corporate studio aspect. But you also have, and what I really loved, I can't remember the line, so I won't butcher it and try to recreate it, but there are moments when old Diener is talking to today's society.
Yeah.
And that right there.
Those are some of the best fucking funniest commentaries.
Those moments where Diener's like, I'm looking at you like
what
the
was
mental
one of them?
He has a mental health comment that had me in the fucking
You just
eye.
Hold it in. He's like, one of them was like, oh no, now you fucking cry and let's hear all about it.
Fuck,
but back when I was growing up, you just fucking stuffed it down. Trauma coach.
It. Thank you.
Fucking died.
And I'm like,
fucking died.
Thank you. Because there was a time where you could use a comedy, you could use some.
Well, and again, it's a
raunchy.
A generational, like it's literally called Diener 89, and you guys did a beautiful way of showing, like, hey, it's the fucking 80s. Like this was a different time. Like you know,
So don't chew us apart from the way we were.
I think comedy. Like, you brought up, you used amazing examples of really good comedies, and what I see is like there's a lot of risk in those, big time.
Yeah.
But comedy always seemed like, at least in the 90s, like 80s, 90s, it seemed like
leader.
That was where you were in a safe environment to take those risks, was comedy.
But like, and that's why, like, hopefully with this movie that people get it is that, you know, like, I wanted to make a movie that is rewatchable, you know, because it's all the little details, and especially, you know, with Paul's writing and Paul's humor and all the other actors too, that like, you know, is that like you'll pick up on little nuggets, you know, if you watch the second time, you watch the third time.
Totally.
And I just love movies like that. You know, it's like, oh, fucking throw it on, you know, and you're just like half cut watching it. You're just like, oh, yeah, that's a good line, you know, so.
Or how great is it to rewatch something for the thousandth time? You're like, holy fuck, that I didn't even like.
Yeah.
And it's something you love. You're like, I see this all the time. Like, I love that.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
And I mean, like you said, like you wanted the 50 cop cars, right? So I saw the Blues Brothers. I saw Slapshot in the hockey stuff. Like you can see this love of like a bygone era of like some of the best, craziest.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Scenes. And actually, Youngblood was our reference for the.
Sure.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
That's
so like you'll if you watch Youngblood again, you'll see shots and even like some of the costumes too. I got like fully inspired by as well. So like
that's great.
Yeah, definitely watch Youngblood again. You'll
that's
see
great.
You see what I was inspired by for sure.
I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really
yeah.
awesome.
I want to bring up the list here of what this thing's nominated for. So you got Best Supporting Performance with Mary Walsh and Will Sasso. Best Lead Performance for Paul Spence.
Fuck
John
yeah.
Dunning Award for you, Sam. Best Original Song with The Power of the Tribe.
Fuck yeah.
Best Makeup by our friend Doug Morrow. Doug's done the show
Doug's
multiple
great,
times.
Yeah.
Yeah,
then,
Doug's rad.
Rick and Sean Skeen
right.
doing the stunt coordination and Rick doing the stunt driving, I believe, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Fuck, Rick is an absolute legend, man.
Rick is Manitoba stunts.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't really do stunts without him. Like,
so like, no. Okay, so Dean's like, I'm gonna be the Tom Cruise of Canada. I'm gonna do all my stunts, right?
Fuck,
Paul's game to do that. But then you've got a pro like Rick who's like safety first and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Was there any friction there between
No, you know.
Like Paul understood.
Yeah, it was all contained. Like, you know, there was some moments, but you know, like take for instance the Trans Am chase with the van and the bikes. Like,
yeah.
So those dirt bikers are my buddies, my like really good buddies that I go dirt biking with all the time.
That's
and
awesome.
So that was fucking cool to be able to be like, okay, like my boys are there, and yeah. Everyone was just like, okay, you know, even Rick, like, okay, you know, can these guys do this or whatever? I was like, listen. I know exactly what they can do. They can wheelie all they want. They'll jump off this ramp. Like, this is easy for them. Like, you know, and it's like, okay. And then they're like, you know, first take, they did it. And they're like, oh shit, these guys are good. You know,
that
was super fun. You know, just,
that's awesome.
Those, but yeah.
Bringing your buddies to the dance with you. Like, I mean, that's the dream.
Well,
right?
And again, going back to the creative process, it must be really awesome to know, like, I know these guys, I know how I can get what I need out mm-hmm. of them. Like, I don't mm-hmm. have to worry as much about someone I haven't worked with before or whatnot. So again,
exactly.
Like, it's so awesome hearing that. And again, it shows, because those seats are, I think I looked at you, Mike, and I was like, is this Mad Max? Is this turning into Mad Max?
Oh, and
like,
then,
this is awesome.
They're kerfluffle at the end at the fair and
this
everything.
Is awesome.
Like, the whole rigmarole is just,
it's
like,
fucking
this
great.
This is bigger than it ever could have. Like,
it's just world building without expecting it.
Yeah.
Like, you guys are doing world building, and I'm like, I don't expect this. This is awesome. Like,
well, and again, it's like, it's down to, like, it gets ridiculous. And but again, it's because Diener's telling the story,
right?
You know, and so like the wizard van of having like the big fucking dragon on the side and everything like that, and Merlin's on it and everything. It's like Diener imagined all this. And again, is it real? Is it not? Like, we don't know. Is it embellished? Yeah, probably.
For sure.
You know, so.
But it's what you would expect in a story being told from Diener about himself, right?
Exactly.
Like, it's exactly what you would expect. So.
Yeah, he's a good bullshitter.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the best. That's half of storytelling, right?
Totally.
Where does the story stop and, you know, the charm begin?
And you forget, like, that's why I love when it goes back to Diener sitting in the chair in this mansion. He clues you in and you're like, oh, yeah, that's right. Like, this is all him telling, like, where the fuck did he get to here now? And then that's why.
There was a point where those breaks, I was like, no, back to the old shit. I know you. I want
to
know this.
And then again, the big revelation at the end is still fucking, like, you still found a way to surprise us, because I did not expect that. It was fucking hilarious.
Oh my god, it's so funny too, because those gold records, like when he's wearing the gold records,
those are
Randy Bachman's records. Like, again, Kyle just like got them last minute, because Paul wrote that scene like the night before. Like, so if you look closely, it's like taking care of business, you know, it's like on there.
That's so funny.
Oh, yeah,
fuck, that's great.
Yeah,
and it's just so like, that's so like such a Manitoba made. I love it. Like, that's right.
Throwing that stuff.
We'll get you some gold records. We got some.
Made a few.
Well, that's the great part about Manitoba, is because it's small. Everyone has worked with everybody. Everybody knows everybody. The locations are great. Like, I remember when I first stepped into Winnipeg, and you know, we're making an '80s movie, right? So I'm like, as soon as I drive from the airport, I'm looking at all the houses and buildings. I'm like, oh my God, there's a location. Because it's like, it's timeless there too, right?
Totally.
You know? And so I was pretty stoked as far as like locations goes. Like, there was some really awesome spots, and but yeah, the crew figured it all out, you know.
That's
like,
awesome.
Okay, what do you want? And I'm like, oh, I, you know, need this. Like, all right,
that's comment on repeat. The crew there is awesome. Like,
I mean,
everybody
hey,
we've talked to has either come through or
I think he said it best too, is I think that is a huge advantage of us being a little bit of a smaller community, is that community gets along, they work together, and they all, again, it's that care, they all share the same goal of like, let's make the best fucking movie we can, you know.
Yeah,
like,
and no egos too, which is great, you know. Like, everyone was just so fucking down to earth. And maybe it'll be worse in 20 years. I don't know. Like, you know, you get more business there.
For sure.
But, you know, for now, for sure. everybody's great.
Come on, come all, where everybody's not in the fucking clouds. I remember going to see this, and like everybody, right? You find out about it, and you're like, oh, is this, what is this, right? Is this a sequel? Is this a new story? Like,
where
do we go with this? And I remember seeing the fans outside, like, losing
shotgunning, taking
pictures with him.
I didn't even realize when we left that the car was parked out there, and it was like, holy,
oh, nice.
It was fucking awesome.
Like, it's one of the coolest movie premieres I've been to.
Paul showed up, and he was, again, full character. He just loved it. I mean, they even said, I can't remember who came out, was like, yeah, we're going to delay it for 10 minutes because we had to tell Paul he has to stop taking photos with fans and stuff.
Yeah, that was
and
I'm Kyle,
like,
I think.
That's what you fucking want, though. Like, he knew. Yeah, like, he loves his fans. He really loves his fans.
Oh, he does.
Well,
yeah.
And then seeing that walking in, I was like, okay, everybody shows up for dinner. It doesn't matter what iteration it is.
I was freaking out.
Like, you were losing your mind.
I was losing
when
my mind.
I
was like, I never thought I would see him even from like 10 feet away. Like, never in my life.
I saw him the first time I met him at the Pyramid for something here.
He was performing. Yeah, I went to that too.
And I was just standing next to people he was standing next to. And then all the beers came out to shotgun.
Yeah,
and
just
put one in my chest. And I'm like, you don't say no to Paul.
No.
So I'm like, fuck it, go, right? And shotgun a beer with the guy. And you're just like, this is a moment I'll never forget.
Well, and that's what I love is, like, again, you guys have helped reignite this Canadian icon, literally this legacy comedian, and look at the fan community, the love that this guy brings and everything. It's so cool, and it's just great that he got to take a version of Diener that he probably never thought that he would get this chance either, and it's awesome that, again, everybody, right? Like, you guys delivered something that I never expected, and I couldn't be happier to have. You know what I mean? Like,
I appreciate that. And, you know, I think it was really cool, for Paul in this one too, to be able to, you know, write his own film, you know, be the lead and also produce it, like, and do the music for it. Like, to have that creative control, but, you know, at the same time, still we were able to collaborate the whole time. It was definitely our baby, but it was definitely his baby too, you know.
For sure.
And it was really, he loves the movie. He still loves it, you know.
Yeah.
Your marketing run. I remember when he showed up at the Burt Block party.
Yeah, he showed up at the Burt Block party too.
The Burt Block party.
That was
here
hilarious.
In town.
That was fucking hilarious.
And just seeing him run around, like, it was like it was one of the funnest things to watch somebody like promote their shit and it's not small, but it's more intimate, I think, when it's in our backyard.
Yeah.
Right? Even as big as that story is, it's still like, no, he's ours.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What I love, too, is the amount of pride that you guys had to filming in Manitoba. Like, the credit for Manitoba in that movie, it's like, everybody cheered. Remember when it said, everyone was like, awesome. Woo! Yeah, oh, yeah. Because, like, how can you not feel pride even, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah.
That's, you know, and Kyle was great in that too. I think that, you know, he's a proud Manitobian. Is that what you say?
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever.
Manitoban?
Yeah. 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 There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He, you know, and I think that it added to this story. Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
To put him in Winnipeg is just like, you know, it's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just made it that much better. Seeing it on the license plate. And, you know, Kyle was the one who got it. He got Giver. Like on the license plate.
That's
and
awesome.
Still, he still has the Trans Am with the license plate.
That's
so, you know?
Awesome.
So,
love that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
you've done your first feature is taking one of the most iconic Canadian characters in the history of cinema and giving him a whole new story and fucking nailing it as you do it. What's next for you? Are you taking a minute? Are you still basking
in
the
glory? Take minutes.
Never take a minute.
I don't want to take minutes. I just want to keep going, you know?
Sure,
so, no, I got a couple scripts that are, you know, out right now and trying to get out. As far as like the next Diener movie, I don't know. Like, you know, I think that, you know, because we were so hard in it, it was like take a breather, I
For
think,
sure.
you
sure,
know, after
yeah.
that. But I got a couple comedies and actually horror and action as well too. So
fuck yeah.
Yeah, but I want to go bigger for sure.
Nice.
Dude, like,
nice.
I
don't want to jinx it, but I think May 31st is a big day for you, my friend. And
I hope so. Yeah, let's knock on wood. And if not, you know, it's still awesome to be nominated, and you know,
totally.
It'll be a good party regardless.
Oh, yeah.
Paul's
totally.
Gonna be there, and
yeah. Oh God,
yeah.
I have no idea what's coming.
It still gives you that momentum that you're on the right. You know, you're doing the right thing, and you keep doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah.
It's
exactly. But Canada needs more comedy. I think, you know, it's
Yeah.
We need to laugh more than ever.
I think so too.
You know, just like we can't get divided like the States. Like I think that, you know, it's just, you know, it's just go out and give her, you know?
Totally. And hey, what better brings people together than being able to laugh at the same stupid shit? You know
exactly.
what I mean?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, yeah. No,
totally.
Yeah. What if Diener was sitting here, what would be his one sentence review?
One sentence review, or what would he say?
Yeah, what would he say about the movie if someone was
it's a deadly movie. Where's my royalty checks?
Fuck yeah. That's beautiful. Yeah. That's perfect. It's perfect. Fuck yeah.
Okay,
I love
dude.
That.
So like we've talked about the stuff that we were really wanted to talk about, but there is another part of you that predates all this, and I'm sure you still do a lot of this stuff. Like I went over your website. You've worked for Meta, you've worked for Call of Duty, you've done stuff on The Mandalorian. Like
holy shit.
You've come from the video
it's
game world.
Awesome.
You've worked on Call of Duty, like you've worked with Neil Blomkamp. Like you're in the visual you're in visual arts. What's it like having two awesome skills on two different sides of the entertainment industry that you can just bounce back and forth now?
Yeah, I guess it's sweet. I don't know. I got bored of one, go to the other. I think since I was a kid, I've always wanted to direct movies because ultimately I love movies. So I think that I got into games being an editor, and then, you know, I started editing kind of game cinematics, and then next thing you know, I'm building my own shots in the game engine, and then next thing you know, I'm directing cinematics and stuff like that. And so, you know, I think that like everything that I've learned from games, I've been able to take to live action too, which is really cool. So like take for instance, what I was talking about earlier of all my references and, you know, world building, right? Like that's what we do in video games really well, is because you're building stuff from nothing, right? And so you need tons of references. You need to create the world and create the lore and everything. So, you know, pre-vising everything and you know, just having the vision very clear, because it gets very expensive, you know, because I worked on like $200 million games and stuff like that, and so it's just like it gets fucking crazy, and so you need to know what you're doing and articulate that to big teams and stuff like that. So I think it's been a cool ride, and I think that I've always kind of kept up my creative chops, but now I think, you know, for me now I'm trying to double down on the directing live action now, because I think it's just like I owe it to the little kid in me, I think, to make more movies, you know,
love that, Spielberg. I love it. That's fucking awesome. That's awesome.
He's going back to play he's playing with his trains.
It's a very interesting time right now in the industry, because there is a lot of
I'm gonna cut Charles off here for 1 second. Charles is a huge gamer. Charles can talk game like Rogan can talk fighting. Like it is.
What's your favorite game?
Funny enough, I think Metal Gear Solid's got to be probably one of my all-time favorite games of all time.
Nice.
And it's funny you mentioned cinematic, because that game is like more a movie in a lot of ways than a game. You know what I mean? Like that's probably one of my all-time favorites.
Isn't Jordan Vaught Roberts supposed to be directing Metal Gear Solid?
Yeah, that's what I heard. I mean, you know, it's passed so many hands in the last like 10 years, but I believe he's current. Yes, I believe that's the current.
I know Jordan pretty well. So
get out. It's fucking awesome. I mean, that's huge. That's huge. I mean, what I find so neat is there's a real cool transition in the industry right now. I think a lot of video game directors are kind of in your situation now, where like Hideo Kojima is talking about finally directing, and he basically makes movies.
Storytelling.
Neil Druckmann, obviously with Last of Us, like that's been his huge. So it's, and I mean, when you look at it, like it's so funny, like my wife will pop in whenever I'm playing something and she'll be like, this is a game, and I'm like, games have always really taken kind of the cinematic approach. That's why they're literally called cinematics. Like, you know, so what's neat is, though, it's now getting put in a medium where it's like, what you do there, can you do here with people? And you're like, fuck let's do it. You know what I mean?
But it's really interesting, because like, you know, because I get asked all the time, like, okay, so if you're going to, you know, what game IP would you, you know, make into a movie? Because like Hollywood especially is looking for IPs like crazy.
Yeah. They really are.
It's fucking crazy. It's nuts. Like, they're like, oh, do you have like a comic book or a graphic novel or, you know, like just give us an IP. We don't care what it is. Just an IP that we can like pitch. I'm like, what about like a new idea? Like, you know, and they're like,
totally.
No, it's too much risk, you know?
Yeah.
It was just crazy. But I can't remember my point. What was my fucking point?
I get it.
I don't know. Pilsner's kicking in.
I think you were comparing the changing of the industry.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, like, you know, games is very much like immersive storytelling, right?
Yeah.
And so you could play a game for days, weeks, months, right? And
for
be
sure.
just like fully immersed in it. But then to like translate that into, you know, a 90-minute movie or a 2-hour movie or whatever, right? Like, it's hard. And that's where like a lot of these game studios will like try and make a movie, but they're like giving too much lore or just too much shit, you know? And then it's just like, oh, this movie sucks. And so to adapt, like, I think the reason why The Last of Us works so well is because that was a cinematic game to begin with.
Totally.
You know?
Totally.
And it's a great story. So you know, just put Pedro Pascal in there and you know, it's no brainer, right?
Well,
you
and,
know,
so. And hence why like there are some shot for shots. There are some shots. There is some dialogue for
good already.
Well, and again, they're making a lot of these games, like especially story, like there's a huge push for microtransactions, online, mobile games.
Yeah.
So when you have studios that are making just straight up linear single player, it's a story based game. It's approached like a movie more than ever, you know, and it's also technology too. Like they're able to, the way they film with their live actor or with their motion cap actors is like very similar to what you would be doing on a set.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You're still directing actors.
Totally.
Yeah,
and you're getting emotion.
It's not as cool. You know?
It's a lot of imagination still and looking at a monitor because you're like, they're wearing fucking
the kaiju
gray suits right now.
The kaiju will be here in post. Don't worry about it.
No, for sure. But it's really cool. And again, like I think that, you know, having that games background, like I'm definitely grateful for it. And I think I learned a lot, you know, and I basically climbed as high as I could. And I was just like, I just love shooting live action. You know, I just think that it's because what you shoot is what you get, you know, and you're stuck with it. So you have to be like, but you get some like incredible happy accidents too with it as well. Right. Like it could be like, you're shooting this location suddenly, and I don't know, the sun's going down and it's just, and everything just works. And this is like that type of magic I just absolutely love. And I love thinking on my feet too, and adapting if you need to.
Like going back to your cop car example, right? Like in a video game, that's never a problem. You know what I mean? And it's programming.
Totally. Unreal Engine's
right. It's programming, but in real life, it's like, fuck.
That's also the danger too of like, you know, if you're iterating too much, sometimes you can just make something shit, you know, and so sometimes working in games, it was always like, okay, like because we can change it doesn't mean we should fucking change it. You know, it worked 10 versions ago. And now like, because you have like a bunch of execs and, you know, all just like questioning themselves and questioning their jobs, then like, oh, well, we should change this, and then like you're doing it right up to the last minute, and so you know, that's what I kind of hated about games. And that's just, it's so hard because like I was involved a lot with creating new IPs, you know, especially when I worked at EA, and you know, it's sometimes the worst because you can basically, the playing field is kind of endless, right? And then you're like, okay, what should we do here? And then you're just like trying to narrow down the idea, and then you've got too many cooks, and then you're just spinning your wheels and all this stuff and prototyping. And it's just like, sometimes, you know, it's almost easier to take an existing IP and be like, okay, we can just do it like that, when you have like such like tons of amount of money and a big studio behind it, you know? So new IPs sometimes are the worst, you know?
I do a little bit of editing, and it's sometimes like when you use a new program and they're like, hey, you know how you've just been using these 10 tools that you're really great at? There's now 1,000. Sometimes it's like, I don't think I need all of that. Do I? You know what I mean? And then you start, but I should, because now I can use, like you start, and it, in a way, it can kind of cause the wrong kind of creative process, and it can kind of like be like, like you said, like sometimes it's easier to just be like, you got to make something using these five things. You're like, okay,
yeah,
that's easier for my brain to comprehend than saying endless.
Here's a box of resources. Yeah.
Well, because then there's a pressure to be like, this thing has to be nothing but fucking incredible because I have endless resources now. You know what I mean? Like, it's a different kind of creative process for sure. Yeah.
Totally.
Is there a game that you've helped design that we should play, that Charles should play?
What's your favorite cinematic you've directed or something that stands out that you're like, this is one of my favorite video game things I was a part of,
like,
or something?
Electronic Arts, Jesus.
That's a hard question. I don't know. I mean, like, you know, I think that the last game I worked on at EA was Anthem, which was a complete turd.
Yeah. it was. It was a little bit,
you know, and actually most of the games I worked on were like a 50-60 Metacritic. So it was it was really challenging where I was like, oh my God, like this game didn't do so well. This game didn't do so well. And it was at the time where they were releasing games way too early because they were trying to please the shareholders and you know, meet their quarter and all that stuff. Right. And so, so that was always disheartening, I think, where you'd work on a game for, you know, 2 years or whatever. And then like, oh, and it just sucks. And you're like, why did I just put all my time into this, you know? Yeah. Or just like the players don't care about the cinematics, that they're literally just like,
Y button, Y button, Y button.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, fuck me, I guess.
But Anthem was a cool one. You know, it was because I actually ran that whole marketing campaign. And so at the time, I think they gave me like, I don't know, it was like $45 million or something like that. Oh, to be like, okay, you know, put your vision on this. You know, the CEO basically told me, he was just like, make this a blockbuster. And I was like, okay. So then that's when I got Neil Blomkamp to direct that, that live action spot.
And it was so cool.
So we spent a bunch
I remember
of money
the,
on that.
The marketing for it was fucking wild.
Yeah.
It was
really
good.
Yeah, that was
good.
All me. It was awesome. So like I ran the whole campaign, and so that I was pretty proud of that, you know.
For sure.
And
well, that won an award.
Yeah, it won a Clio, I think.
Yeah,
for best visual effects.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
And Neil, I imagine, is a great guy to collaborate with stuff like that, right?
Neil's fucking awesome.
I love
and
Neil.
And it was actually really cool because, you know, I was basically the middleman between Neil and all the execs.
Right.
So I was basically the creative director that was like, okay, I want Neil to direct this. And I just basically, you know, kept everybody away so that Neil could just do his thing.
Yeah.
And we shot it in, we went to Hawaii and shot it like where they shot Jurassic Park, and we were blowing shit up. And went to Spain and we shot in this like couple castles and stuff. And so like, I really got to know all his crew too. And he had all the Oates guys.
Oh, yeah.
And so actually Richard Simpson, so our production designer is Neil's production designer.
Oh,
and
awesome.
So he was on Dean 89.
Oh man, it's fucking awesome. Awesome.
So that's why like the sets look so fucking good, because like Rich is literally will turn water into wine, and like all I have to do is be like, Rich, this is, you know, show him a picture, and then he'll just be like, he will stop at nothing until he gets that.
I was thirsty at the end of the movie, so
I love it.
Yeah,
I love that though. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Just a craftsman, like, okay.
Yeah, totally. But it was, but just to be able to watch Neil at that level do it. And I was literally, you know, beside him, you know, at the monitor with him the whole time.
That's
awesome. So I got to watch how he worked and everything. I'm like, it was really cool. And I definitely learned a lot, you know, from Neil as well. And so,
this is the nerd mess. Did you happen to learn about District 10 at all? Was there any talk of District 10?
No, but I'm sure he wants to make it. Absolutely. You know, but no, he keeps that stuff pretty tight. We still talk, you know, every now and again. But,
but
it was really cool because like he got to send me like a lot of his ideas that he did for Oates, and he, you know, he made some really cool shit. And
I'm a huge
fan. What do you think of this?
That whole series is,
well, I think it was during COVID. Remember, he released his sketchings, like he was going to do an Alien movie with Ripley, like with Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
And that whole concept, I was like,
well,
let him do it. Like, what are you doing?
Remember when we went and saw Gran Turismo and we were like, is Neil Blomkamp
that
making
was
a fucking epic racing movie.
And again, like, that was such a wild card. Like, that was such a, in my opinion, when they announced that they were making that,
I was like,
I get why Sony's doing it, but like, okay. But when they said Neil, I was like, he doesn't fuck around. These are going to be some of the coolest.
Oh, those drone shots.
Yeah,
and the
we're
turns.
So wicked.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah, he understands like machines and tech so well. And he's just got like a really good taste in like fucking sci-fi and stuff too. So, and he's a really good dude and he's very fucking smart, you know?
Yeah.
So,
He's got a great, like, talking about comedy. He manages to throw in a little bit of humor in all of his things, and like dark humor,
and I love it.
Like, it's great.
No, he's actually really funny too. And we had a blessing, I think, when we were in Hawaii at the beginning, and then you know where they give us these lays and they do this whole like, traditional blessing or whatever. And then I remember we were shooting this one shot and we were shooting with a Phantom, and there was this big explosion, and this guy gets pulled back, you know, in these fucking harnesses, and it's just like a big action scene. And we're like, producer's like, we got to get this shot, you know, and they kept fucking it up, and it gets expensive too for the Phantom if, you know, we went over, right? And so anyway, then Neil's just fucking stressing, and I'm just like, dude, I'm like, put the fucking lay on, you know? So I'm like, we all put these fucking lays on. And he's like, and we just got one shot. It's like, literally like we got like 2 minutes and then we're into, you know, double overtime
or whatever.
And, anyway, we got the shot and he's like, oh my God, it worked. You know?
That's awesome.
So funny.
Use the culture.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sam, thank you for spending, all this time with us and sharing your stories.
This has been awesome. Totally. This has really been a treat. Like, thank you.
Thanks
so much
for having me.
This listener, if you're listening to this, tune in May 31st at the Canadian Screen Awards, which is the Canadian Oscars. If you don't know, you probably don't know, but the Canadian Screen Awards are the equivalent of the Oscars.
Yeah.
They are big deal awards. They are for the best in Canadian cinema. This film, Diner 89, is nominated for 7 of those awards. 2 people in the same category.
Yeah,
same
which is
movie,
awesome. It's awesome.
Same category.
It's fucking awesome.
That doesn't happen that often.
Yeah, it's
so
pretty
that just
awesome.
Tells you the caliber of the film. Where can they watch it right now? Where is
it? It's still on all the major streamers, but it's going on Crave for all the skids that didn't want to, you know, buy it or rent it. It's going on Crave on the 23rd.
Oh shit! That's awesome.
That's
all right.
So at this point, it is on Crave. Go watch it. Go enjoy it. Go find out where Diener came from.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome. It's great.
And it's actually you know, for those that want to get a little boozy on the flights, it's going to be on Air Canada and WestJet as well.
Fuck
too,
yeah.
So. Yeah.
Well, they might regret doing that, but
fucking Calgary watching Diener 89 drinking fucking Pilsner.
Yeah. Shotgunning on the plane. Fuck yeah.
It took so much work to not do this episode in Diener's.
the whole time.
So much work. Oh, yeah, but fucking A.
I was going to say, like, seeing Paul going in and out of that must be fucking unreal. Like, that's great. That's great.
He's a chameleon. He's a chameleon.
Totally.
You should see the other side of him, which is just like, he's so smart and like suddenly he's speaking French and talking about art and you're like, what the fuck? Like, you know, he's the full spectrum, you
know?
That's
awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Well,
yeah.
Send him our best next time you talk to him.
I will.
And
you should have him on. Have you guys not had him on yet?
No, we would fucking love to.
We would fucking love
to. Let me ask him.
I'll reach out.
Oh, my God. That'd be fucking
awesome. If he's telling us to reach out to him.
Yeah, hey,
he told us to get beers. We got beers.
We're fucking in.
We'll say, hey, Sam told us to talk to you.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Like, hell yeah.
We'll do the Hollywood thing. Yeah, Sam said it was cool.
Sam gave us the go-ahead, so yeah.
Yeah.
No, and sending you nothing but, you know, good luck, obviously.
Yeah, much love, dude.
I think it's going to be an amazing experience, and we're so excited to see what comes next from you, man. Like, it's going to be really awesome. Really excited.
Yeah. Yeah, you never know. It could be shooting in Manitoba again. So,
hey, we'll see you soon.
You never know.
We'll have you over for beers next time.
Fuck yeah.
Right on.
Yeah.
All right. You're going to have to get a few.
Yeah. Not a problem, dude. Not a problem. I'm 30 seconds from a vendor. listener, if this is your first time, go backwards. There's a bunch of these. We've interviewed a ton of people, a ton of great Canadian filmmakers, a bunch of different technicians, a bunch of different departments. This isn't the only one. If this is your first introduction to us, you need to go listen to the other shit, get a well-balanced diet of the Real Debaters. It isn't always this amazing. That being said, subscribe to the show is the easiest way to support us. All of the show notes will have everything about Sam. If you want to follow what he's done, if you want to look at the trailers, all the information about Diener 89 will be in there. I don't have anything else.
Thank you again.
Dude, Sam.
Right on, boys.
Until next time.
Luck of the Irish.
All right.
Hey.
Right on. Take it easy.
Cheers. Yeah.
Giving her.
Ow.